The lines disappeared from the asphalt as I catapulted into the pitch-black unknown. My heart thumped to the frantic flap of the windshield wipers as my knuckles went white, rigid around the steering wheel. With every brain cell focused on the 6 inches of pavement I could make out in front of me, I had no mental space to process that I was out this late, in this storm, because the impossible had just happened. I'd been handed a dream job, one that came with a brand new dream life. In short, I had been right. Circuiting 3 universities in 2 states every week could lead to something. My career wouldn't cap off teaching out of a Chevy Spark with a trunk full of ungraded papers, a tumbleweed of half-clean clothes, and a pile of snack wrappers riding shotgun. A mid-semester tenure-track promotion wasn't something that just happened, especially to someone 2 years away from a Master of Fine Arts in creative nonfiction. It was a rare, aspirational position that had seasoned PhDs scrapping and scrambling for interviews with national search committees. It was something no adjunct instructor ever declined discussing, even after a 7 p.m. class at the tail end of a 13-hour teaching day. Even with ominous clouds looming in the weather radar report and an hour's drive ahead, there was nothing to do but stay and listen to the academic dean describe the raise, the office, the job security, the schedule tailored just for me. Maybe the storm wouldn't hit before I was past the 12-mile stretch of unlit, unlined road. Maybe it would never come at all. It didn't occur to me that driving blind through a storm wasn't the only threat to my brand new life. I had no way of knowing the fast pass to the tenure track I'd just scored in the dream job lottery came at a steep cost. It would be days before I'd realize the plan I'd made with Danny the week before was tantamount to jumping the guardrails. And even if I did manage to keep my little spark on the road, it wouldn't keep my life from derailing. Danny's story had put me on a collision course from which there was no turning back. Hearing his story had changed everything.
Being a sixth grader with both a penis and a period was confusing, to say the least. But long before my momentous puberty, I was a befuddled toddler at war with a dress. "I don't like dresses. I am a boy." I shook my tangled mop in frustration as I pulled a t-shirt and shorts from my drawer. "I want to wear this." "Danielle, you're a girl," my mother said. "Well, I'll be a boy when I grow up." My parents had 6 children. My older brothers Rick, Bill, and Jim. My older sisters Barb and Mary. And me, the child they called their red-haired little girl. Except I wasn't a girl. True, at that moment, my 3-year-old body looked like a girl's body, but I didn't know that. What I did know was that I seemed to be the victim of a terrible mistake. In my mind, I was clearly a boy, but everyone kept calling me a girl. How could no one see me? The other thing I was sure of was that I wanted nothing to do with the short, frilly dress my mother, Sherry, was holding. "But the green is so pretty," my mother sighed in exasperation. Barb and Mary loved dressing up. In fact, my mother had just recently sewn them each new dresses as a final project in a home economics class she took at the local high school. Finishing the class earned her the diploma she'd forgone 20 years earlier when she left her unstable home at 16 to marry and move away with a young college student, my father, Ben. I know my mother succeeded in getting me into that dress at least once, because I'm wearing it in a faded 1973 snapshot of our family outside our standard-issue house on the California Air Force Base where we were stationed.